Ben Moore has been in love with bees for as long as anyone can remember. And as far as we can tell, the feeling is entirely mutual. Although he still sometimes feels the sting of his passion. Hang around, learn a little. It's as sweet as honey and always a buzz. It's the Ultimate Pollinators Podcast with Ben, his friends and associates, and of course, Ben's bees.
Hey everyone, Bees with Ben, another awesome episode on today. Now, as we know, whether you're a commercial beekeeper or a hobbyist beekeeper, there's so many different ways to learn. One could be obviously buying books, you could be on the internet, you could get a mentor, talk to people at beekeeping clubs. There are so many different ways, but a really popular way is obviously on the internet. And there are some fantastic pages on the Facebook. And there's one particular page which is awesome, which has got almost 20,000 followers. We're going to hear all about it. Is Backyard Beekeeping Australia. And I have on the line Barry Roberts, who started this off. And thank you so much for your time, Barry.
Yeah. Hi, Ben. How are you doing?
No, good, thank you. That's awesome. So obviously, I think it was a couple of years ago now, you decided to start it off. What made you start off the page?
Yeah, it was about 4 years ago. I started with a couple other Facebook pages just as a user of them and learned a lot, and some overseas ones and some local ones.
Okay.
But I found very quickly that a lot of the local ones were dominated and controlled and censored by commercial beekeepers.
Yes.
And if anybody wanted to talk about something that was relevant to backyard beekeepers, it was seen as a contrary to the interests of the commercials, it would just be blitzed out, censored out. Mm. And so one had to be very, very careful about what one said, because the control by the commercials wasn't in their interest. It just, you didn't get very far. So I got sort of sick and tired of tiptoeing around all that sort of stuff, and so I decided to build something that would be focused on the backyard guys.
Okay. Awesome.
Backyard people, and opened it up to commercials. Anybody wants to join. We opened it up to overseas as well, because one of the things I believe right from the word go is that Varroa would arrive at some stage.
Yes, we'll talk about that a little bit later on.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, but Varroa or other diseases would arrive in Australia at some time, and that having people from overseas as members could give us a bit of an insight as to what would happen when it did arrive and so on. So, and give us a bit of an education on what they're doing and so on. So having a perspective on a world perspective. So we've got about 10% overseas members.
Okay.
But it's 90% locals. And and then I spent a lot of time in the first 12 months or so building a lot of educational material, and lots of fairly big library there of good articles. But I started it, I pulled in quite a few moderators to help me out, and we've got a very good team. We just seem to it's a well-oiled machine now.
Yes.
We we don't have to worry, we all sort of know what each other's doing and what you're all on the same page, so there's a little bit of argy-bargy sometimes when people get sent to the naughty corner, and
yes.
There are rules, and a few people get shown the door after they break the rules excessively and persistently.
Yes.
But, so Facebook now as a tool provides a lot of a lot of tools for the moderators. So, if people start using certain words, swearing or whatever, it'll flag what's going on, so you can find the needle in the haystack, and as moderators you can deal with it. But it used to be a lot of work as a moderator, but now it's like 10-15 minutes a day. But and you're just doing that while you're going through the page, because there's a lot of traffic there and a lot of interesting articles and a lot of comments and so on.
Yeah, exactly. What I'll do is I'll, just for any listener who's not aware of it, I'll put in the show notes the link, so to definitely check that out. But just go back a step. You mentioned there does seem to be a little bit of a, well, this goes across, you know, overseas and various pages, but there is a, there seems to be a little bit of a divide between, you know, a commercial beekeeper and a backyard beekeeper in there. There's kind of like this, this sort of strange sort of pecking order type thing, would you say, Barry?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Well, one of the things that really caused a big divide here was when the commercial honey at the supermarket was proven to be adulterated.
Mm, yeah.
There were whispers of it and talk of it for a long time, but then two different groups tested within 3 months of each other, and one used the NMR testing, which is the German top of the line German testing, and proved that a lot of the supermarket honey was full of rice syrup, and not all brands, but just, you know, but enough of it, and to be of concern to customers. Yes. And consumers. And then 3 months later, University of New South Wales did exactly the same thing, and they did it with the C3 C4 test, which was the hue and cry from the commercial beekeepers and the honey packers initially, was that, oh, NMR is useless, it's no good, Now honey's different, and it's all, you know, and you can't believe it. So the university did the C3, C4 standard test, proved the same thing, same, you know, adulteration. So consumer, if you just look in the supermarket, you'll see that the consumers still remember. And that what used to be three sections in the aisle with honey on it is now down to less than half, or probably 2/3 to a half of one shelf. And the shelf, the number of shelves you get in the supermarkets is directly related to the sales. So one could say that the sales have come down by a third. By 2/3.
That's interesting, Barry. It's also sort of jumping in there that, do you think a lot of people got into bees for that very reason, because they want to know where their food come, where their honey has come from? Would you say that?
That's right. A lot of people did, and things like Flow Hive, you know, created a big big interest. You know, and you could they could see people harvesting honey, that kicked to interest. Some people went and bought Flow Hives, other people went and bought Long Langs or Kenyan Hives or standard Langstroths, and they just gave people a general interest. People like to see that where their food comes from, and then also they've got something there they can give away to their friends, and, you know. So, there's been a big spark in interest.
And obviously, we'll sort of talk about the whole varroa issue that we're experiencing at the moment shortly. But do you think, my question is, I suppose with the hobbyist beekeeper, what would be the biggest issue that you find that they struggle with? Is there one particular, you know, seeing on the Facebook page, is there one particular issue that you see?
One of the problems, is pest and disease identification and control. Things like AFB, for example. AFB is catastrophic when you get it, but you don't see it every day.
Yes.
And so people, when they see it, often they don't know what they're looking at. And then they can't tell the difference between an EFB and AFB, and then what to do about it. And then they just think, oh, no, well, the bees will be right. They'll just look after it and they'll clean it all up and I'll feed them a bit of sugar or whatever and she'll be right, mate. So there's and luckily that AFB isn't a huge problem, but it's about, and that's the biggest thing. And people with AFB, it is sort of counterintuitive. a lot of diseases, let's say like things like COVID, you know, if your immune system's down, and you'll catch the flu and you'll catch COVID and so on.
Yes, correct.
But with AFB, it's the other way around, so that it's the strong hives that go and bully and rob the weak hives and pinch all their honey. And if their hive was weak because of AFB, all its honey will be full of AFB, and next minute you've got a strong hive or multiple strong hives with AFB sitting in your backyard.
Yes, yeah. And it's interesting you mentioned about the hobbyist beekeeper, you know, identifying that, because it's often people think AFB, it's just going to be this big sort of soupy, smelly mess, but it's not that case quite often.
Well, that's right. Well, you can't smell it at all. Mm. So it's, it's not... it's a really bad case. It might be a hot day or something. You might be able to smell it, but a trained eye can know enough to say, right, I don't know whether it is or not, but I better check for it.
Check for it. Yep.
Yeah, better check for it. Then you just dig around, have a bit of a look, and whatever. But yeah, so yeah, it's having the confidence to be able to then call it and say, yeah, okay, yes, it is or it isn't. And then the consequences, of course, I've got to kill my bees. Well, but hang on a minute, I just bought these bees and I spent $1,000 and I've got all this and I've sort of got a lot invested in it, and I've even named every bee and I've named the queen and they're giving her a nice green crown or whatever. And of course, I don't want to kill her. But,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then I'll leave it 6 months and see what happens. Well, that's really the biggest risk and the biggest sort of heartbreak for people, until, of course, the rower, which we'll talk about later.
Exactly. Have you heard about the vaccine developed in America based on research from Finland? Have you heard about this one?
Sorry, what is it?
Well, so it's actually a vaccine developed for AFB. It was developed in America based on some research out of Finland. I'll put this, there's a really good, interesting link, so I'll put in the show notes so anyone want to sort of hear about this, because they've actually fundamentally found a cure for AFB.
Well, that sounds good, yeah.
It does, yeah, which is interesting. So, I'll put that in the show notes for anyone interested to, because that's absolutely very, very fascinating. So, what obviously, other than the sort of...
Certainly be better if we don't have to deal with AFB and Varroa at the same time.
Exactly.
Then having one under control instead of them both out of control, it'd be a lot easier for people. But anyway.
Oh, I totally agree. And it's the poor bee just gets smashed with, bacteria, viruses, fungus, chalk brood. Just so many different issues the poor bee.
But they're really good at cleaning them up. Like, for example, I've had hives that I dealt with or helped some people with, and they were riddled with EFB.
Yes. Yep.
And it was mess, and went through it. It was either EFB or AFB, and then I went right through it and checked it, pulled brood, did the Vita kit tests and so on, and it was EFB. Okay. And all we did is they'd been under a lot of stress. They'd been moved on a hot day.
Okay.
Yep. By the owners of the bees, and they left them locked up for a bit too long, and so they got a bit overheated and whatever, and then under stress the EFB kicked off. So all we did is there was four hives, three of them were heavily infected with EFB. We just put ripe bananas on the top of the frames, and split them down the backbone, and put the skin side down. And then two of the three were cleaned up within 2 weeks, totally clean. Yeah. Everything's clean.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. No sign of dead cells, no perforated cells, nothing like that at all. It's all clean, clean as a whistle, and a brand new clean brood, nice brood pattern, all clean. And then the third one, which was a slightly bigger hive. It just needed another dose. We just gave another dose of the ripe banana, and then boom, all clean. So just a month, you know, within a month. And I got onto the DPI, and I said, you know, because I reported it and whatever down here, or Ag Vic, and said, they said, oh, yes, well, if it's a bad case of AFB, then you can use antibiotics.
Okay.
And I said, okay, well, what do you do to get your antibiotics? Oh, well, you've got to go and see a vet and blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay, well, what's a bad case? Oh, a bad case is a bad case. Yeah, so you'll see it. You'll know it when you see it. Well, you know, so there's nothing scientific about it, you know.
Yes.
So I think if some people will probably just jump to, oh, well, there's a little bit of it, so that's a bad case. So bad's not a very scientific descriptor. So I said, well, I think what we'll do first is we'll try the banana, and then if it's really bad, the banana won't clean it up, and then we can go down the next step to the antibiotics, but we never had to.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's
if you're in the know, you do that. But a lot of people would see that and say, "Oh no, that was AFB," and then just and kick it, you know, and kill them.
That's interesting. And the interesting you mentioned about the antibiotics. So I wonder how that would work, because I've never had to sort of, I've never used antibiotics. I wouldn't know. But is it a case of, you know, taking some photos, going down the vet? You know what I mean? Saying that I need some.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, that was the problem, because there's only a couple of vets in Victoria. You know, I've spoken to one of the apiary officers, senior apiary officer at the time. And he said, oh, yeah, there's a couple of them, and, you know, if you need to, and we'll get you in contact with them and so on. And then, yeah, so I'd imagine you'd be taking photos and whatever, and they wouldn't necessarily know, but they'll give you a script for yes. Ollie's lolly.
Yes.
Terramycin.
Yes.
And then just mix it up in sugar water and just feed it to them in sugar water.
Interesting. I used to be right into aquaculture, and they used to use that oxytetracycline for fish, but it must be about, I'd say maybe 8 to 10 years ago, thereabouts, actually banned it, because, you know, the problem is, you know, using antibiotics consistently, and this goes for all creatures,
yes.
Yeah, put up a resistance to it. And I think they're having this problem over in America, because you can actually buy that, go to a beekeeping supply shop in the States and get like a, you know, you can buy it in a powder form, to, as you say, to mix up with sugar. You can buy it in a patty, so a pollen patty, yep. With antibiotics.
Yep.
So, yeah, so it can get abused.
Yeah, well, the overseas, they use it to suppress AFB.
Yes, yeah.
Because it will suppress it, but it doesn't get rid of it, doesn't yep. kill it.
Yeah.
So if you're desperate to hold your hive and you want an extra bit of life out of your hive, then you can overseas in America. They can you can just put your Ollie's lolly in there, and you'll get an extra 6 months or so out of it.
Yeah,
so well, there's a lot of talk about them feeding hives that are a bit sus with AFB preceding winter, overwintering them on Ollie's lolly and sugar water. So.
I like that. Wally's Ollie. I like that. I've not heard that.
That's what's called Ollie.
Wally's Ollie.
Well, yeah, Ollie was apparently one of the guys I don't know, but that's what it's called, Ollie's Lolly. Yeah, tetracycline or terramycin. There's a few of them you can use, but yeah. But so they just, and it will just suppress it. You know, you might get knocked down 90% of the AFB with it, but there's still that 10%, and as soon as you take the antibiotic off it, boom, away she
yeah,
goes.
Yeah.
And even if you keep pumping antibiotic on it onto them, they'll die anyway, it's just slower. So it's banned here. You can't do it here.
Mm.
But you can use it. European fowl brood, it's effective, but there's not that much of European fowl brood. It's just every now and again. That's the only case, in fact, I've seen just on those three hives.
Yeah, and as you said, there was a stress factor with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of the diseases with bees come out with stress. So a lot of it's food stress or moving stress or weather stress or, you know, dry, hot, whatever. And the things like chalk broods, fungus, it's there all the time.
Yes.
It's just that when it overwhelms the bees, and they're under stress, then they just don't keep cleaning it up. But that's another one for the you see quite a bit of it. But if you can get that get banana into them with it, you can very quickly get rid of it. They'll just rip it all out, chuck it all out the front door.
Yeah, some interesting research on the banana, because they're sort of talking about if it's potassium or what's the gas that that ripening bananas produce? Is it ethylene or something?
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, the ripe banana. You can turn the skins from green to yellow with putting acetylene in, but the banana itself gives off acetylene. I think it's acetylene.
Ethylene?
I think it might have been acetylene. Anyway,
it's one of those gases.
But so what they'll do is with the banana, if they want to ripen them, they just stick them in a plastic bag.
Yes.
And so the gas that it's giving off, it might be ethylene, but the gas it's giving off will then speed up the ripening.
Yes.
Whereas if you don't have the bag there, the gas just dissipates away. And so they can do the same. They do the same thing with tomatoes and stuff. You know, you buy those tomatoes from the supermarket; they're almost green inside. They're white inside, but they're brilliant red on the outside.
Exactly.
And it tastes like cardboard. Same thing.
It's interesting. the price on bananas. Remember, it was a couple of years ago that were like $12-15 a kilo, and now I think they're $2 a kilo now because it's
That's right. Yeah, but lettuces have taken the place.
Haven't they? Exactly.
Well, I had a look today. I was in the supermarket today and I had a look. I've got a couple of capsicums here and I thought I'll just get some more capsicums. I normally go to a fresh food market to buy them. For green ones, I want about $15 a kilo.
Oh, fair dinkum, really?
Yeah, so I didn't have a look much fruit and veggie. So I just go to this, where I am, is a fairly large fruit and veg place, and I just go there, and normally they have reasonable prices, but anyway.
Exactly, yeah. It's I think there might be the off season too. Let's say they.
What's happened? Yeah, when I say it's off season, like a lot of those, capsicums are spring summer crop down here, but they can grow them up in Bundaberg and up in Queensland.
Yes,
but the problem is they've had a lot of rain and all that sort of stuff up there, and then there's also problems getting them picked and then getting them transported. And so there's a whole series of problems. I saw some poor guy up in the Hawkesbury, and he'd planted three lots of cabbages.
Okay. Yep.
Three crops, and they'd all been washed out.
Oh, because of the floods. Yes.
Yeah. Three in a row.
Oh, bloody hell.
He said, I don't know whether we'll plant it anymore. He said, we're giving ourselves bad luck. If we don't plant them, it rains.
Oh, boy.
So that's one of the big problems. But then, you think you're having problems with, the veggies. Well, if you don't have pollinators, you won't have peas and beans and,
exactly.
Apricots and cherries, peaches, apples. Your pumpkins, cucumbers,
zucchinis, yes, yep,
a lot of your nuts,
yeah,
not true. Just almonds,
yeah, that's that's
macadamias,
true.
And so there's about 30-40% of the food that we eat is in some way pollinated by bees,
yes,
and we can still live, but the variety of food will change. It's a bit like having $12 lettuces. We decide now we'll have a cabbage on our McDonald's burger instead.
It's interesting. What's your prediction for the upcoming season for us in the southern part of Victoria? What do you reckon? How's our season going to look? You think?
Well, we've got this La Nina still hanging around us, and. So hopefully it won't be as bad as last season in terms of rain in in the spring, because last there was a lot of hives, you know, especially feral hives and so on, hives just left out to fend for themselves and not move, that were starving in spring, starved right through because we had La Nina, and then you'd have a nice day or two and you'd have a bud burst and a pump of nectar, and that night just the bees had sort of bookmarked it to come back the next, put the GPS down to come back the next day, it rains.
Yeah, it all washed out. Exactly, yeah.
It all washed out. And so they go back and say, oh, gee, it's all empty. So, you know, so, yeah, it's, I'm the predictions are from the sort of long range weather forecasters, it'll still be wet spring, but it won't be as wet.
Yeah, okay.
So, and, you know, we haven't had a huge amount of rain. Well, we had a lot of, we had a substantial amount of rain, but we haven't had a huge amount of rain. So I think you'll probably find that the eucalypts and whatever will flower quite well. And so it could be a good crop.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be good because it's everywhere. I'm driving from Gippsland to the Alpine country, sort of the other side of Tolmie and sort of a little bit inland. Everywhere I'm looking, everything's got buds. And so as long as we see that big yellow thing in the sky and lots of it and not too much rain, I think we might be in for a cracker season.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it all depends on the rain.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, and then depends on how, and so, but you might have, say, heavy rain for 2-3 days and then 2 weeks of nice sunshine, then you're okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, but what we had was, it was sort of rain overnight, just enough to wash things out. Then you might have a day or two and then there'd be another rain and then.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, it was hard work for the bees.
Yeah, exactly. No, so true. Now, obviously, Varroa destructor. There's probably not a beekeeper that hasn't spoken about this to other beekeepers, and it's just absolutely a talk of Australia. And it's almost, would you agree, there's almost a divide. You know, there's a half a lot of people sort of say we're going to get on top of it. There's another lot of half people saying, no, I think we're stuck with it. We're going to have to learn to manage it. Do you have an opinion on that, Barry?
Well, I see. Yeah. Well, I think that it's almost the divide of COVID, isn't it? That,
it is, exactly.
You know, we're over it, so we don't wear masks and we don't get vaccinated because we're over it. And if we say we're over it enough, we'll believe it and we will never get infected until we get infected. And then, you know, so the problem is if you toss in the towel and you say, rightio, we are going to live with it, it's like living with COVID. You know, like you keep getting infected all the time. You can't get rid of it. It just keeps coming back. And once it's in the hive, you can take all sorts of measures, chemical measures, non-chemical measures, at different times of the year, but none of them will ever get rid of it.
Exactly, yeah.
All you can do is manage the numbers. Now, you know, and if you if you're managing the numbers to try and stop your hive dying, getting overwhelmed by it, then you know you've got to be in your hive a hell of a lot more. Yeah, so exactly. All of a sudden, you know, the idea of walking out the back and turn the handle and out comes the honey disappears. So you now got to get a bit more serious with it. So, you know, it's not like with a dog, you know, you take them down to the vet every year to get their annual shot and then they're all right. They're not going to get a virus or whatever. If you're going to use sacrificial brood, so what they do with that is they put in a third of a frame of drone brood comb.
Yep.
And let them draw drones out, drone comb out, and then the queen drops all the drones in there, and then 80% of the varroa love to get, well, they've all got to be on drone. Sorry, they've all got to be on brood to multiply and to, but when there's drones and workers available, they will go straight on, 80% of them will go into the drones. And the reason they like to go on the drones is that it's 24-day gestation period, not a life cycle for the drones.
And more space. More space for the Varroa too, I think.
Yeah, more space, but also it's more the 24 days. It's the extra 3 days because the extra when they emerge from a drone, they're sexually mature.
Yes, yes.
And they're already mated. They make brother to sister inside with the drone larvae.
Mm.
And when they come out, they just go straight back into another cell. So there's no chance of or low chance of them getting killed or flicked off or whatever by the bee. So if they go on to a worker, they've got to then come out, spend 3 days on a bee, and the bee can flick them off, and they drop on the bottom board, and they either fall through the bottom board if it's an open bottom board, or just drop on the bottom board itself. And then they've got to try and scramble around, try and get themselves onto another bee or something. But, you know, there's a chance of mortality.
Mm.
So, they prefer to go into the drones. Now, what you can do is you can just put a third of a frame in and then just take that out after 2 weeks, maybe, you know, 21 days, got to be less than 24, and just take it out, freeze it, and then you can either pop it straight back in again and they'll pull it all out. Pull the dead ones out and clean it all, and flick the rubbish out the front door. Or you can use an uncapping comb, and you can just pull them all out yourself. But you freeze it first, so you make sure you kill the larvae and kill the varroa. Pull them all out, and then you can pop it back in again. So each hive, then you can have two of those. You just rotate them around. But that's extra work.
Oh, it is. That's right. So let's fast forward the clock to 2024. Barry, do you reckon we'll be dealing, or the hobbyist beekeeper will be dealing with varroa mites? What are your thoughts? Knowing what we know now, being 19th of July, 2022, what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, my guess is that
it's here.
Based on the limited information we're getting from the officials, is that they've already thrown in the towel. They've already said, right, we'll have to go into containment. New South Wales DPI is removing the standstill order, so off the New South Wales hives go to super spreader event down at the almonds. The almond industry is putting a lot of pressure on Victoria to open up a quarantine zone to slip in 80,000 hives into Victoria, New South Wales into Victoria. If they do that, you know, then any swarming and whatever, any feral bees in that area will be infected. And then in those areas, of course, you've got peaches and apricots and all these things. So any Victorian beekeeper going up there to pollinate those will pick it up, and it'll be exactly the same as small hive beetle. Yes. Small hive beetle came into the Hawkesbury, came in during the Commonwealth Games in year 2000. Within 2 years, almost every hive in Australia has got it.
Yes, yeah. Interesting times, because I'm of the same opinion. Like, I want to remain positive and optimistic.
Oh, I'd love to remain positive. I'd love to see it killed and eradicated. I think that's the ideal outcome. But I don't see with governments, you don't pay attention to what they say; it's what they do.
Yes. Yeah.
And what has been done is consistent with tossing the towel in.
That's yeah.
Now it may well be an absolute fluke that the varroa has been contained in the non-blue area. Absolute fluke, but. Who knows what queen? There's queen breeders in those red and yellow zones, and they've been breeding queens. And when you breed queens, you sell them.
Well, with escorts, you got escorts
and escorts, but you sell them, and you sell them to people who want to buy them.
Yes.
Now, you don't sell them to your next door neighbour. You sell them through the post, or you sell them. You know, people come and pick them up, and they drive them for hundreds of kilometres.
Yeah, or in the state.
So. Yeah. And I don't see too many people want to stick their hand up and say, oh, yeah, well, I've got 5,000 hives and I bought queens from this guy and I might have Varroa, and if I do, then what's going to happen to your 5,000 hives?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because there's no compensation. So there's no, there's this, oh, yes, we'll compensate you, but what are they going to compensate for? So they're going to compensate just for the for another hive body?
Yeah, for a box.
Well, for a bee colony, or the loss of income, or you know, the actual hardware, you know, your trucks. What do you have to destroy? You know, and what value? Yeah, it's a bit like Victoria. Though Victoria says, oh, yes, well, you get AFB, we'll compensate you. Well, all they compensate you for is the amount of money it costs you to run them through Steritech.
Yeah, to radiate the boxes. Yeah, that's right.
To radiate the box. You don't get compensation to buy another hive.
Yeah, no,
you got to go and catch a swarm or something, you know, or whatever. So all you do is just irradiate the box and kill off the AFB. So, you know, that's something. I'm not having a go at them. I'm just saying, but that's compensation, open, close quotes. But there's been no definitive information out on what compensation might be for the New South Wales guys. And that's, and you know, because it could be huge.
Mm, exactly, yeah.
You know, it could be huge. You know, there's 300,000 commercial hives. There's 300,000 commercial hives that go to the almonds.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it? Mm.
And it's roughly 45% of them are from New South Wales.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I read. Yep. Yeah.
And it's about 20% of them are from Victoria, and about 20% from South Australia. And so at least you've got about 15% or something in the middle, and that's from Queensland.
Yes.
Now the problem with the almonds is that Victoria's got 25% of the hives, but they got 60% of the trees.
Yes. Yes.
And South Australia's about balanced. They've got about 20% of the trees and 20% of the hives, so they're pretty right. And they've said, right, shut the door, you can't come in. So we've learned from COVID. We just put a barrier. Nothing's coming in. Nothing's going out. If you go out, if you go interstate, you can't come back.
Mm.
But in Victoria, we've got you've got to get a permit, and that's great. You know, we're getting a permit, so everybody that moves a hive in Victoria to the almonds has to have a permit. That's fantastic. And then we just, if we can get permits to follow people around, then at least if it does get into Victoria, you know, some of those queens came down from Newcastle into Victoria and we happen to find it in Victoria, we can get on top of it, we can follow it around. But the almond industry is saying, oh, no, well, we'll just... You know, because Victoria is 80,000 hives short, they can't supply their own. Then they want to bring 80,000 hives from New South Wales into Victoria.
Yeah, it's got crazy time.
And it's all along the Murray from Robinvale, all on their Robinvale up to Mildura.
Yeah, exactly.
Now even if New South Wales bring them right down to the border, stick them on the Murray, the southern high water line of the Murray is New South Wales.
Yeah. Exactly.
So if they stick them on the Murray, the bees can fly 10 kilometres south and share Varroa with bees that are on the Victorian side. Mm. So we'll already get an incursion. It's not like COVID where it's 1.5 metres social distance. It's a 10K social distancing.
Yeah.
And then if you have the bees that are on the southern side in Victoria, if they're 20K from the Murray, they can fly 10K north and meet up with the bees that are coming 10K south. So you really need to create a 20K buffer zone along the Murray.
Yeah, and then you've got all the feral hives. You know, I mean, that in
sorry?
The middle. Well, all the feral hives in the middle.
Well, that's right, yeah. But so then any feral hives that are in the 10K zone inside Victoria can get infected by anything that's infected from New South Wales sitting right on the Murray. And then if amongst all those almond groves, because it's all irrigated land there, there's peaches and nectarines and plums and apples and cherries and so on, you know, If you got feral hives in there that are all infected, and someone unbeknownst from Victoria goes up there, the almonds are all over. So the New South Wales have pulled back from the border. We're okay. Well, if you move them up there, you might get infected by the feral hives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then it'll just come down and say, then I'll come down to the Mornington Peninsula because there's some good manuka or something down there, or you know, move them up to Seymour because there's some yellow box or something, and all of a sudden it's all over.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring that up.
Won't take long.
Yeah, no, true. It's interesting you bring that up because if it does get out and does spread, it's going to be a real game changer. And I think it's going to be a little bit like COVID. We're going to see a lot of people suffer and go bankrupt and fall over. But there's going to be some, the people who can hang in there and get through it and manage it and work with it, we'll see the light.
Well, the problem with managing it in the early days, if it's like when coming to New Zealand where there's no varroa resistance in the queens and in the colonies, then you lose 100% of your feral hive straight away.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And you lose 50, 60% of your managed hives. Even when you're managing it, even when you're putting pesticides or miticides in there and doing all the sorts of treatments that you can, you still lose a lot over winter.
Yeah, exactly.
So what has to happen is, if you want to have 1,000 hives to take to the almonds, you'll have to do splits to run 2,000 hives on the basis that you might have 1,000 die over winter, so leave you still with 1,000.
It's interesting you say that because I know a beekeeper in Canada, what he does is he does 30% splits in spring, 30% in late summer and autumn. So 60%, that 60% is to recover the 60% of hives that die over winter from varroa.
Yeah, yeah. And so when you're doing all these splits, they chew up a lot of honey.
Yes.
So your honey yield goes down.
Exactly.
So even for commercial beekeepers, doing all these extra splits so you've got to do another, more splits, so it's more labour, and you end up with less honey. And, so then you've got honey packers squeezing you on price all the time, and the commercial beekeepers are price takers, not price, setters.
Yes, yes.
And so that was always one of my big beefs with the commercials, was that they would just take a very low honey price. And I said, well, why? Same with pollination. Why would you take a low price when, if you half organized yourselves, you could move the price up. When I started up Backyard Beekeeping Australia, New Zealand had a honey price, wholesale honey price, $10 a kilo Australian, $10.
Yeah, well.
When at the time, our guys were lucky to get $3.50 to $4.50, depending on the quality of the honey. Half, less than half.
Mm.
And it's all because of the power of, a handful of packers controlling it all.
Yeah.
And, And then the packers start getting greedy, and then start putting in the rice syrup and whatever, and then they sort of bugger themselves up. But anyway,
interesting
but,
times.
So and the problem is when you squeeze the price and you squeeze the beekeeper, they've got to cut corners. You can't do things as well as you would like because you're cutting corners.
Yeah.
You've got to cut labour out somewhere along the line. You see some of their beekeeping practices and you can see, it's all about cutting labour now.
Yeah, interesting times, isn't it, Barry? Interesting times. Well, that's great conversation. So we'll wrap it up. I just want to say really appreciate you being on the podcast. It was really good. And I've got to put in the show notes too. So anyone who hasn't listened to hasn't seen the Facebook page, I'll put that in there because it's definitely worth checking out. It's almost getting close to 20,000 followers. Well, what's the party?
It's about 19,400 or something, yeah.
Were you having a party, Barry?
20,000. When we get to 20,000,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. Buddy, that's a fantastic milestone. That's really, really good. So, Barry, once again, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And we'll get you on. We'll probably, what we'll do maybe in a year, this time, July 2023, we'll have another conversation and we'll see. We'll see what's happened over the last 12 months.
Yeah, I've got to also say the moderators do a bloody good job too. So, yes. You know, it's not just me in there, but, you know, in the early days, there was a lot of argy-bargy. There was a lot of, bulls in china shops and a lot of people trying to throw their weight around and, yes. you know, how dare these upstart backyarders, you know, try and control the narrative and, you know, do their own thing. And so, you know, you get, we had a lot of that. So we had control a bit of that. But, you know, I think in terms of, you know, a lot of people think, oh, yeah, he boots out lots of people and, you know, anybody who doesn't believe or doesn't accept what he says, they boot. I think I've booted, there's about 250 people have been booted out.
Okay, yeah.
It might be 300 now. But about all bar 50 were spammers from overseas trying to sell Bitcoin or, you know, this sort of stuff. You know? So, like, there's about 50 loudmouths have been Australian loudmouths have been booted out, and everything's nice and smooth.
Nice and
runs
smooth.
Like clockwork.
Is there any of the moderators? Any names you want to shout out?
Yeah, well, Shane Pacioli, Robert Wood. Vanessa from over in South Australia, French bee lady over there, and what else we got? Rod from up in Queensland. So they do a fantastic job, and we had a couple of others, that come through the door and helped us out. But yeah, they moved on. It was a lot of, in the early days, you know, it was a lot of work. You know, they spent an hour or two a night trying to clean up the mess. But we just really, Imogen was in there, and then who else was in there helping us out? And
it's interesting why you mentioned that. It's, you know, beekeepers, we can be very passionate about our beliefs
but what I try and do is all the time if people start getting really passionate, I don't have a problem. I just ask questions of why would you say that, or why. My background is engineering and education, so what I try and do is the engineering side of me tries to look for the facts and figures and the science, and then the education part of me then tries to engage people, because you can't educate people unless you engage. They're engaged.
Yes.
So often, what'll happen is I'll ask, you know, the stupid questions, and, you know, like, I know the answers, of course, but I just ask the stupid questions and whatever, so people can then get engaged. And then sometimes people take it the wrong way and get a bit triggered. But if there's a little bit of argy bargy, then people, oh, that's interesting. No, that's fine. You know. But, you know, a bit like Big Brother on the TV, you know, I said, well, get interested, you know, sort of thing, you know. And you got to keep a little bit of spice in there. It's, you know, can't be all dull and boring.
Yeah,
but, yeah. And the key thing is to put up provocative posts to get people thinking and to get them engaged.
And talking about it, yep.
Well, if I just send you out, like if you get an email with some one-sided comment from me or from anybody, then, or even if you watch YouTube, then you can doze off. You know, your brain's not necessarily engaged. Mm. But you see a little bit of argy bargy, and then you see this side, and you can see that side, and you know, often people come in with a myopic view, so they come in with a view of themselves. You know, all they know about beekeeping is their own way.
Yes. Yep.
And sometimes we get this with commercials, sometimes even with backyarders. Oh, I've done it this way, so that's my way. So it's sort of my way or the highway. But they can't see that in different climates, in different environments, you know, it's different being in a backyard to being on the back of a truck and migrating all around the country. And there are all sorts, as you said right from the word go, there are all sorts of different ways to do things and to learn about it.
Exactly.
And so I just try and tease out the why. And one of the things that you find, if you keep asking people the magic question, why, if you keep asking it and keep asking it, you'll eventually either work out one of two things. One, they know what they're talking about, and there is some fundamental reasons and some scientific reasons, or they have no idea.
Yes. Yeah. Interesting.
And I read it in a book, or someone told me, or whatever. So you know, it's a great way. It's a good lesson for people when they're on social media to ask people why they make statements.
Yeah, you know, why they think that particular way, exactly.
What are the benefits? Or, you know, you don't have to say why. You just use, you know, what are the benefits or whatever. And then and often it adds adds a new perspective to something you hadn't thought of, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. Yeah. Well, Barry, that was absolutely fantastic episode. Really appreciate your time. As I said, in a year's time, we'll revisit and have another chat, because that was a really, really good episode. So thank you.
Okay.
Take care, Barry. All the best. Take care.
See you, man.
Take care. Bye for now. Bye. How awesome was that episode talking to Barry? Really interesting. Absolutely really good topics there. You know, talking about pest and disease management, regards to obviously chalk brood and obviously using banana. Have you heard about that? You may be a beekeeper and, you know, putting a ripe banana in your hive to combat, you know, various things. And as Barry said, you have a chalkbird, which is very, very interesting. So great conversation and so many different ways to learn. And the Facebook page is really good. You know, some great content there. And Barry's taken a lot of time. There's some really good articles. There's like an information section on there where you can actually jump on and actually see it. So big shout out and kudos to Barry. Thank you so much for your time for doing that. And until next time, take care of yourself, take care of each other, and take care of those bees. Bye for now.